G'day, and welcome to the Fasting Highway podcast. I'm your host, Graham Curry, from Perth, Australia. I lost 60 kilos or 132 pounds living an intermittent fasting lifestyle and have successfully maintained that weight loss now for over a year. I wanted to bring this series of podcasts to you to give you an insight into what that journey has been like. I also wanted to give you some information about intermittent fasting, talk to people that are doing it, and bring in some experts in the field, including some leading authors of some great books about the subject. Talk about the highs, the lows, the triumphs, the celebrations, the negatives, the positives, and everything in between. Nothing is a silver bullet, as they say, but intermittent fasting is about the closest thing that you can get to a perfect health plan with a side effect of weight loss. So sit back in the next few weeks and enjoy life on the fasting highway with us. Thank you. G'day, welcome to the Fasting Highway podcast, and this is episode 24. So today, I'm delighted to be joined by Eddie D. Friedman, and I consider Eddie a friend, and Eddie is from Long Island, New York, in the United States of America. And Eddie is a husband, a father, a grandfather, and he's a partner in a law firm there. And Eddie has been around the fasting communities for some time, and anybody that's seen any of the things that he's written or heard him on podcasts like this, he offers such a great insight, and he really delves into this lifestyle, and he's very passionate about paying it forward, and he believes that intermittent fasting could help over the billion people that are obese in the world, and he's keen to share his experiences. So here to tell us about that is the engaging Eddie. Oh, g'day, Eddie, and welcome to the Fasting Highway, and thank you for joining me.
Graham, thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, it's great to have you here, mate. You're someone I respect highly, and your insights and everything around intermittent fasting are great. But, Eddie, what we might do is, if we could get you to give us a bit of your backstory and what led you up to starting intermittent fasting in the first place.
You know what, Graham, before I answer that, I just want to say it's a great privilege to speak with you and to be a guest on this podcast. And your personal story is so wonderful, and your passion for wanting to pay forward this gift of IF is wonderful. And I'm truly honored. And in fact, this spirit of wanting to help others is ultimately, I think, the only hope for humanity. So I'm truly honored that you invited me. And so I just closed my window, Graham. So I'm figuring we have about 19 or 20 hours to speak to each other. Am I close on the time?
Yeah, mate, pretty close.
Okay. So you were asking me how I got introduced to intermittent fasting?
Yes.
Okay. As a child, I was raised in the Jewish faith. And the first I knew of fasting, really from since I can remember, is that in the Jewish religion, there are several fast days throughout the year as part of religious observance. At that time, there are different interpretations of how it is followed, as with other religions, I suspect, but someone under 13 is not asked to do it. It's when, at least a boy in a more traditional setting. It's when you're 13 and older. But I remember in the years before 13, there was almost a certain pride about, you're supposed to see, just try to get up till like noon or lunchtime and that sort of thing. But there was almost a pride about it, like, oh, I fasted this long. But it's really separated. It's not done for health reasons at all. And that was my introduction to fasting. And in fact, there's a tradition before some of these fasts that people tell each other, may you have an easy fast. So there's almost a mindset, and I know that's something you're very interested in, but there's a mindset that it's this very difficult thing to do. Now, I knew you were going to ask me about how I started, and I knew I was going to mention faith. But thinking about that, I just want to say something that I find fascinating is how many different faiths, many different spiritual disciplines, as many people know, have had fasting as an integral part of their practice for millennia. And recently, I mean, I was really amazed because here I am, a citizen of the United States, and I didn't even know some of the history, like when the pilgrims came here, you know, and people can Google this and read up about it. It's fascinating. Even though Thanksgiving is now associated with gorging, in those days, being thankful and praying and meditating was very much wrapped up in fasting. And then there was a point when President Lincoln, the founding fathers, around the time we had our Constitution signed, called for like national days of fasting and humiliation. And I was just thinking how the word and the concept of humiliation has changed so much over the centuries, that humiliation, I think, generally is seen as this terrible thing now. But I think they meant it as days to really humble ourselves. And they chose fasting, or they recognized that fasting was a vehicle for that. And, you know, in modern times, you know, people are, even last week, there was some study in JAMA. So, you know, there's still controversy around fasting, even though many of us think it's mainstream, et cetera. But then I look to the experience of the Islamic faith, where, you know, millions of people have been following fasting during the month of Ramadan for centuries around the world. And devout Muslims fast twice a week, every week, year round, which I think is so sort of ironic, because the 5-2 protocol is something that has become popular in recent years. And this is something they've been doing for centuries. So that was a long burst start. But my introduction to fasting through religion as a child was in faith. But then as I came of age and entered adulthood, it was at a time in the culture, at least of the United States, that, you know, for lack of a better term, the me generation was very, and the baby boomers were very interested in, I don't know if it's the right word, transcendence, you know, running, meditating. And I was getting exposed to the idea of fasting for health, and I was aware of it, and I kept fasting for religious reasons. But it wasn't until a couple decades later that I was exposed and began the practice of fasting really for health and other reasons. So there was a lot there, but I guess I should come up for air, and anything you want to ask me.
Yeah. So, Eddie, when you first started, like, intermittent fasting, sort of full on, what was your fasting protocol and what did your window look like? Did you restrict anything, or were you eating all the things at that time early on?
When I first began fasting as a regular practice, it's funny, the way I eat has changed dramatically. My introduction was really to doing it consistently. I was more of a low carber, and I guess the window I've always worked around, and I've done longer fasts, but is more or less a 19-5. And in those days, as I said, I was sort of a low carber. I'd even done keto. And now I actually eat almost the exact opposite. So I'll just go back, actually. I think outside of the religious introduction, so I was already open to the idea of fasting. My introduction to seeing that this was something that could provide other benefits was a book called The Miracle of Fasting by Paul Bragg. And I don't know how many of your listeners are going to know or remember, I hope many do, but Jack LaLanne, who was sort of a hero to me. He was a guy in the, I think, late 50s and early 60s. He had a black and white TV show where he'd exercise. And every year on his birthday, he would perform superhuman feats of strength and endurance. And he was just an incredible person. And as a boy, he told his story that he was quite ill and had many problems. And he went to what was at that time called a health crusade given by this man named Paul Bragg. And if this book, Miracle of Fasting, I mean, it's very light or almost non-existent on science. But if you want to read a real, you know, pep talk, motivational, you know, fasting saved my life kind of book, that's something to look at. And I had read Miracle of Fasting, I want to say 25 years ago, maybe. And actually what he recommended was a sort of skip breakfast and eat later in the day, every day. One day a week, fast 24 hours. Once a month, do like a 3-day fast. And then once a year, do a longer fast. And I never got to meet Mr. Bragg. I didn't know him, but I think his work is excellent for what it is. And now, unfortunately, there are some people detracting from his credentials and et cetera. So I don't know how I feel about him saying certain things about the longer fasting. But I became aware of a very long and deep sort of lineage of fasting. At the end of the 1800s and the beginning of the 1900s, there were people in the United States, I think in England as well, called the physical culturists. There were people like Herbert Shelton, Norman Walker. I really immersed myself. I was so fascinated with that, with fasting. With this idea, I had a really negative family health history. My dad died of heart disease when I was 13, and he had his first heart attack when I was 5. So during those 8 years, I grew up sort of aware. You know, I'd ask my father, can we do this? And he was... And the understanding of heart disease was much more limited than it is now. But he very much had a, you know, I really can't exert myself. I can't do that. And I remember feeling very sad about it. And I just got this idea that I want to do anything I can through lifestyle to just try and enjoy life, the benefits of health, a healthy life, as much as I can for as long as I can. And that led me to fasting. And I just got so fascinated with it. And I still am. So after being exposed to Paul Bragg, I won't go into too much detail on this. I actually had an incident where I was trying to do a fast of a couple of days. This is about 22 years ago. And I was doing some exercise and I injured myself. And some people around me, and at that time, it was certainly was not as accepted as it is now. You know, they really were, they love me, they care about me, but they really were sort of saying, they look, you know, you're probably pushing this too far. It's too extremist. And I kind of, I always kept the skip breakfast, but I kind of backed off fasting for a while. Just, I love these people. They're telling me not to do it. I don't know. And fast forward several years later, I came across the work of Dr. Bert Herring, and he wrote a book called Fast Five. And one thing Dr. Herring says that I think is an observation, I think he's a brilliant man and a wonderful person. He said, at least back then, but it's probably still true, he said, the biggest obstacle to people adopting and to an intermittent fasting lifestyle is not the difficulty of doing it. It's the social aspect of it. It's the resistance they get from others. It's fitting it into their business or professional lifestyle. It's criticism they get. And I don't want to say I was a victim, but I sort of accepted that for a few years. And I know you and I are both friends with Jin Stevens, and I've told Jin and I've commented on her Facebook group that, along with clean fasting, I think one of her greatest contributions has been creating the community of support, at least for me. I think now not everyone needs that. Not everyone has to go that direction. But I just find that that is, for some people, it makes such a huge difference. It normalizes it. You could see why I mentioned 18 or 19 hours at the beginning, right?
Yeah, and what you're talking about there, Eddie, is delay, don't deny Facebook group run by Jin Stevens, the New York Times best-selling author of Fast, Feast, Repeat, and her first book was called Delay, Don't Deny, which the Facebook community was based on or came first, I think. And I really agree with you about that, Eddie. I think the Facebook groups are so important, and that's what really convinced me when I stumbled onto that Facebook group and I saw it was just so many people having such great results and so many great testaments. And I got over that feeling of this isn't going to work because I thought if these people can do this and there's so many of them, then I can too. And we know how much those groups have grown. I think they're up to nearly 500,000 or something like that now. It's unbelievable.
That is incredible. Right. And they say the greatest proof that something can be done is if someone has already done it. No one can tell you this can't be done. That's over. So, I actually wanted to just touch on something I said earlier to like connect a loop. I know I started talking about my fascination with the fact that fasting has been connected with religion, mysticism, spirituality. And I actually find that fascinating. And I've always, in a number of contexts, been also fascinated by the idea of reverse engineering. So, for example, if you're in a less than sunny mood, there's actually an old Charlie Chaplin song with the title Smile. Smile though your heart is aching, kind of thing. But if you can smile, and there's science to back this up, but your mood starts to improve. So, typically people might think, well, if I'm in a good mood, I'm smiling. But it's also, if you can smile, you'll start to be in a better mood. And I don't mean a plastic, fake, phony smile. I don't mean it. And I'm only using that as an example because it applies to an infinite number of things in life that if we do the other side, it balances out on the back end. So one of the things that fasting has done for me, I think this elevated consciousness, I think it works the other way too. And it's not just like if you're going to pray, meditate, you know, reflect, then fast. It's also like if you fast, at least for me, and I'm sure for many others, it raises my mood, it raises my energy, it raises my consciousness. I don't want to preach what others should do, but for me, it just makes me a better person.
You clean fasting right from the start? Was that something you were conscious about, the clean fast?
So when I discovered for myself Fast Five, and I was looking at a lot of other things, you know, eat, stop, eat, every other day. And in any event, I had never heard the term clean fast. I didn't know about it. In fact, there were, you know, quote unquote authorities who said, look, under 50 calories is fine. You're still in a fast. I used to fast having like a cup of coffee with some, you know, a little cream and a few drops of stevia. And about 4 years ago, I think it was, it'll be 4 years in January, I decided that I wanted to bring back. So even though it had been decades since I knew about fasting, since I had tried fasting, but about 4 years ago, for a variety of reasons, I knew I wanted to start fasting regularly again. And I found Jin's book, Delay, Don't Deny. You know, and when I said earlier, her contribution of building the community, which didn't exist 20 and 30 years ago without the internet, and without her personality, I think, as a leader to build it. But she talked about clean fasting. And with all my reading, I had never been exposed to that idea. I mean, I had heard of water fasting, but no one ever said it's preferable to anything else or it's the right way, quote unquote, the right way to do it. And I started doing that. And for me, it just clicked. It felt like this was an upgrade. You know, it was like switching to a car at a high grade gas or something. It was like everything about the fasting experience improved, physically, physiologically, and even mentally. It actually felt cleaner, like in my mind. Like I'm really fasting now. So
Ed, what was the catalyst from the, before you sort of came to this, just go back a bit. What were sort of some of the issues you had with weight in your life? And what was the catalyst where you just said to yourself, I'm going to take the bull by the horns here and do something about my health and find some health benefits with this?
So when I was a boy, my parents owned, here we would call it a variety store. And we sold candy. And we actually lived in an apartment above the store. And for a variety of reasons, life had many different stressors. I had said before, my father had heart disease. My parents happened to have been Holocaust survivors. So life was stressful in my family during my childhood. And I think I would go off and, I want to put the word comfort in quotes, but take comfort in eating, being alone, you know, just go hide with a stack of comic books or something and eating candy and drinking soda. And I really ballooned up. I remember going to our family physician for some kind of school checkup or something, and he had to fill out a form. And I was probably 11 or 12 years old. And I saw that he wrote the word obese on the form. And I remember just feeling awful about it. And I also know, like, I really have had and have an issue with compulsive eating. Like, I just have that drive. And part of how I recognize that is, like, my wife is a real gentle and natural eater, and she'll, you know, take a few bites of something, and when she's had enough, she just stops, no matter what's on her plate. You know, and I have this, like, drive when I eat, which, you know, that's one of the ways IF has really helped me. So, you know, by the time I was 13, I was about 5'3" and about 170. Now, which is overweight, was obese. And I think that body image stayed in my mind, even though then, after age 13, after my dad passed away, over the next 3 years, I grew like 7 or 8 inches and stayed about the same weight. So I grew into an okay weight, but I always had in my mind that it's very easy for me to gain weight. I do have to watch that compulsion to overeat. And as I incorporated over the years, fasting more and more, and especially now, as I said, now for the last 4 years, so it's like, you know, I'm going to be approaching 1,500 fasts, consecutive fasts soon. Now it's just so ingrained in me. But I think it's a very healthy way to live. I think the science bears that out. For me, you know, when we talk about NSVs, non-scale victories, I've been in an approximately a certain weight range my adult life. And, you know, I might want to be a little less, but I go up a little, but I can usually get it back down. But fasting has been a great way for me to just make sure, you know, I sort of don't go out of control with it. Like, for me, one of the biggest NSVs, besides just feeling great, is the way it puts a boundary around my compulsion. Like, when I'm done, I'm done. When I'm not ready to start, I don't start. So I'm not just stuffing my pie hole all day long.
Yeah, I get that, Ed. And it's what you just said then about your childhood, your parents owning the shop and all that. Mate, it's like me talking about that. That's exactly what happened to me. My parents bought what's called a dairy in New Zealand, a convenience store. And I spent 3 years of my high school life doing exactly that, eating the candy, eating the chips, drinking the sodas while I was working there. And that's when I really started putting on the weight as a teenager. And what you also said then, when you heard, when you saw that they'd written about you being obese, when I was 14, it was the first time I'd ever heard somebody say I was fat. I overheard a conversation with my mum and dad, and mum said to dad, "Oh, Graham's getting really fat." And that really floored me. These were my heroes. These were my role models talking about me like that. And it really affected me for some years. And I can really resonate with what you said there. And yeah. So Ed, I wanted just to roll back there a minute ago. You talked about how intermittent fasting has helped you with appetite correction. When did sort of appetite correction come for you after you started fasting? When did that start changing your appetite?
Where would it kick in? I mean, look, because I've been exposed to it for so many years now, some of this is like a little hard for me to place. I think for most people, if someone's starting as a new, you know, from what I hear, I mean, some people are lucky and within the first few days, they even start to experience something. But I think for most people within 3 or 4 weeks, they're like, you know, you see people posting, you know, who am I? Like, they can't believe they didn't finish everything on their plate but I think that's the time range, you know, anywhere from several days. I think that's why Jen has this in her latest book, this 28-day start, you know, to like a 3, 4, 5 week. But, You know, I know you just interviewed a mutual friend, JJ Saunders. And he had a great line. Give it a year, then evaluate. And I would tell anyone the same thing.
Well, I agree with that. And I think you've got to give it that time. And I know it took probably a couple of months for me to find that sort of appetite correction, when I just started getting that automatic signal almost during my window when I knew when to stop. And I think sometimes when we read about or hear about people that are struggling with IF, I say to them, what are you doing when it comes to your window and you get to that point when you've had enough? Do you continue to eat because your window length is 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 hours? Or do you stop? And a lot of them will say, well, no, well, if my window's 4 hours, then I'll eat up to that 4 hours. And they'll say, well, you know, maybe that's your problem. You need to recognize that, you know, when you're satisfied, stop and close your window. If you have a 4 hour window, that doesn't mean that you eat for 4 hours. And I think that's where some people may struggle a wee bit with that. But Ed, I also wanted to talk to you, and I know it's important, how did the mindset and the mental part of intermittent fasting, just tell us a bit about that and how your sort of mental sort of health improved or that sort of thing.
You know, I think a lot of times when talking about food, people use the analogy of throwing gas on a fire versus throwing a log on a fire. I find my energy very steady, level, good energy. I love the rhythm. I mean, I never eat in the morning. You know, when I open my window varies, although it's about the same. I tend to open my window in the early to later afternoon. But I spend a lot of time working. I'm a lawyer, and there's a lot of demands in my firm, in my practice. And I need to have great energy and great mental clarity. And I think I do, you know. Graham, I want to go back to what you were saying about people struggling with their window. And I think you give them great advice. I think there's so many ways that IF involves a paradigm shift. You know, we talk about all the time diet mentality, and this is not a diet, this is a lifestyle. And it's easy to give lip service to that kind of thing, but to really, really take it in very deeply, that this is change on a profound level. So, for example, people want to eat, you know, they as they say, they want to eat for future hunger. Like, okay, I'm satisfied now, but if I stop eating and I'm not going to eat again until tomorrow, what do I do when I get hungry? And they haven't developed the sort of trust, like, or the experience with it that, like, listen, A, you might not get hungry. B, if you get hungry, you'll be fine. C, if you get hungry, just go do something else for a while and it'll pass. And, you know, that's such a different way of thinking that and even the idea of, like, give it a year, you know, we've been sort of raised on this, you know, 30 pounds in 30 days, you know, lose 10 pounds in 2 weeks, you know, and all that. And again, it's a paradigm shift. Like, we're not talking about a quick fix here. We're talking about a lifetime, wonderful way of living. And give it a year, you know, and.
Yeah.
And
I agree, mate.
Yeah.
And the thing is that when you talk about that, giving the year and all the rest of it and giving it the time, and it's so important to say that intermittent fasting is so much more than about weight loss. I mean, Ed, as you know, I lost a lot of weight, 132 pounds over 15 months, but the health benefits that came to me, the non-scale victories, the things like curing my psoriasis, curing the arthritic fingers I had, so many other changes in me, waking up free of aches and pains, all of that, the mental part of it, overcoming phobias that I had, social phobias, worries about going out, worries about flying, all those sorts of things. The weight loss was really a side effect.
That is so beautiful. I mean, I almost wish you could just repeat the whole thing you just said again. I'll have to play it back a few times once this is recorded. That's the thing, that it's just profound. And I remember you even posting, I thought it was beautiful that your first podcast was you talking to your wife. That was just, I just loved it. But I remember you posting online about how IF changed you as a father. And, you know, this is just amazing stuff. You know, it's funny. I mentioned Paul Bragg's book, The Miracle of Fasting. It is a miracle. And it's so wonderful. And it's this gift that anyone can have. It's right here. There's no subscription fee. There's no like lifetime membership. Sign up now before the price increase. There's, you know, it's like, you can do this. There's a wonderful international community, like ready, willing, and able to hear you, help you, support you. And I want to say one other thing, since, look, I suspect some people listening to this will be long-term, you know, IFers, but there may be some people who started yesterday or are thinking about starting tomorrow. When I say give it a year, that doesn't mean that, you know, you may start feeling great within a couple of days. And you, I suspect in some ways, most people will. But you have to be patient with, I think, with some of the benefits. But I'm not saying like, oh, give it a year because nothing really happens until 10 or 11 months. You know, I just want people to know it's like, I think the takeaway is it just keeps getting better and better. But by giving it a longer term, you're also releasing the pressure. I heard your interview with Jin. She used it, one of the phrases I used to love to say all the time, fast, clean, release expectations. To me, that's the entire formula. Like, don't, yeah, go ahead.
It's fasting. The clean fast for me is the whole foundation of fasting. And if you're not clean fasting, and if you're doing anything else other than having plain black tea, plain black coffee, water, or plain sparkling water, you're simply not fasting. You're just calorie restricting. You're not giving yourself the best chance to find the health benefits that we all find. But yeah, some of the things that you've said here, Ed, are fantastic. And I wanted to go back to about what you said about books too. And when you start looking for resources about intermittent fasting and how helpful they can be. And I know I'm not a great person on science. I mean, I'm not a scientist and I don't really drill down into the science a lot. And I know when I've just written my own book, I didn't put a lot of science in there because I didn't want to parrot other people's science that much. I did put some links and that sort of thing, but was the science of IF really important for you, Ed? Is that something you continue to look at?
I'm on Long Island in New York, okay? And you and I are speaking to each other, and it's being recorded, and people from around the world, I have no idea. Like, you sent me an email, I clicked a link, and a second later, I have no idea of the science that is making our conversation right now possible. But I know it's happening, you know? And I know when I get, when I get into my car, I can't really explain how the internal combustion engine works, but I know how to drive. And look, as far as the science goes, you know, what do they teach doctors? First, do no harm. I'm a big believer in let common sense be your constant companion. Like, if you are not feeling well, see a doctor. If you're medically cleared, and like, you can go into this very gently. you know, you might feel a little discomfort. Even if a person has never considered themselves an intermittent faster, maybe there was a day where you overslept and you were late for school or work and you didn't have time for breakfast. And when you got to school or work, it was busy. So that day you didn't get to eat until lunch. Somehow you made it. Like, that's all this really is. Or maybe you got busy at work and lo and behold, there was no time for dinner. And by the time you got home, you were just too tired and you went to sleep without dinner. Like, anyone who's ever done that has fasted. And that's like, this isn't, I think one of the things that we do is we make it too complicated. To answer your question more directly, I know I was going all over the globe metaphorically, but we don't need to, like, there's enough science there. If you want, go to Google Scholar and enter intermittent fasting. I mean, people like Mark Mattson, and, you know, whenever someone comes in the group and says, you know, so-and-so is saying this is going to destroy my metabolism or kill me or whatever, I tell them, look up Mark Mattson, his credentials and what he has to say about it. And I'm, as well as there's at this point, so many medical doctors. I mean, the science is there. I'm not a scientist either. I don't really need to go too in depth with it. And ultimately, the most important research study of all is your experience. You know?
Yep. Yeah. The experimental one.
Yeah. I mean, if I read a study that X happened to 100 people, but when I try it, it works out to be Y or Z. I mean, what value is that study to me? And, you know, but again, use common sense. Don't be foolish. Don't be reckless. Don't say I'm starting tomorrow and do a 72 hour unless you're willing to cut it as soon as you are not. I mean, put your toe in the water, you know, be gentle with yourself and grow with it and join our group and talk to other people at different levels.
Yeah, I think it's really important. That's great advice too, mate, is to get plugged in. I call it, you know, keeping plugged in and talking to other people in the same boat. And I know doing this podcast, mate, and now this is about number 30 podcast that I've recorded so far. And I've talked to people all over the world and they all have that one common bond. And they say, you know, it's so important talking to other people that are living this lifestyle. And so when you're sharing it with people, Ed, when you see somebody that's obese, do you feel like telling them about intermittent fasting or do you, or how do you approach
it? Do I feel it? Yes. Do I do it? No.
Yeah, it's a hard thing. I find it very difficult seeing an obese person. You can't just walk up to them and shove it down their neck. And I think one of the reasons that I did start this podcast and I did write the book was I thought, well, maybe that's my way of being able to share what I did and what happened to me and how I overcame this, rather than sort of, you know, standing on a soapbox in the street corner and preaching it to people. And I know when some people that know me and they see me after a while, well, I haven't seen me for a couple of years, and they say, oh, my God, what happened to you? And the first reaction is they think that you've been sick. And then I say, no, well, I wasn't sick. The second reaction is they think you've had weight loss reduction surgery. No, I haven't had that either. And then I tell them about intermittent fasting. But when I talk about intermittent fasting to people, Ed, I usually lead off with the health benefits. And I say, look, let me tell you about the health benefits first, and then we'll talk about the weight loss, because for me, that's much more important, as we just said. And when people hear about the health benefits, I think that gets them interested. But you're right, people are looking for a quick fix.
Yeah, I mean, look, much of life is bittersweet. And I have had exactly that. I mean, all I need to do is walk into a supermarket or, you know, in the States, we call it a big box store. And look, we have, at least in this country, but I think worldwide, an epidemic. They call it diabesity. I mean, it's like an out of control fire. And Look, I'm not saying that everyone can do this. I think to some extent, everyone can, that everyone's going to feel comfortable with it. I mean, I don't believe in a one size fits all prescription, but there are, to me, literally hundreds of millions of people, if not billions, that could be helped if they knew about this, if they considered it, if they felt supported to do it, if they started it. And if they gave it a year, like it would change the planet.
Yeah, it would. And we just need to get our medical people more on board. It's interesting, Ed. I interviewed a lady called Sarah Cull, who's coming up on the podcast. I think she'll be episode 11 or 12. But she works in a medical clinic in Auckland, New Zealand. And they are now treating obesity and diabetes too. The frontline defense is intermittent fasting. And they will not send patients for weight loss surgery unless they've tried intermittent fasting first. And I think that's fantastic.
It is. I had a friend who had bariatric surgery. And I will never forget, she gained a tremendous amount of weight back. And I will never forget her telling me, like, even though it made her stomach smaller and she couldn't eat the volume, she said, like she would microwave ice cream and pretty much drink it. And you gotta go to the root cause of a problem. You can't just put a band-aid on it. I know some people have probably had life-changing success with that, but I said a few minutes ago, first do no harm. Also, the minimum effective dose or the least invasive therapy or approach or treatment. Here, there's no harmful side effect. The harmful side effect is you might get a little hungry at some points. Like, wow, who hasn't experienced that anyway?
Yeah, I agree. And it's like I say to people, look, nobody's ever died because they didn't eat breakfast. Nobody's ever died because they didn't eat breakfast or lunch. And when I used to get negativity from people, I'd say to them, well, you fast yourself. And they'd look at me and shaking their head. And they said, what do you mean? I said, well, you go to bed at night, you sleep for 8 hours or 9 hours, you wake up in the morning, you've been in a fasted state, and then you have breakfast. Why do you think it's spelled break fast? And that's what it's designed to do, to break your fast from the overnight sleeping period where you've been giving your body that time. All we're doing is delaying that a bit further and giving our body that time to help our organs, to regenerate our cells, and just give us a break from eating food all day. And I think that's probably how I find intermittent fasting is so sustainable over a long period of time, is what you found.
I think what you're saying is exactly right. And also, in terms of you saying, I think you're doing a wonderful thing with this podcast. You don't know who you're touching, who it's going to influence. Right, you're not standing on a soapbox on the street corner with a bullhorn shouting out to the world, like, let's all start fasting tomorrow. But I love that you're sharing, like you look. Graham, you were very courageous. You saw what was going on for you and had been going on for a while. And you said, nothing changes until something changes. And you made the change. And now you're sharing this message. And again, you just never know the way that one life touches another. I look forward to the success, further success of this podcast. But I know a couple of years from now, you're going to end up hearing a story like, oh yeah, my cousin listened to your podcast and told me about it. And then the rest of the story,
And it's fantastic. But Eddie, I have to ask you too, 2020 has been a bloody tough year for people out there. And obviously in your country, it's been very hard, and particularly in your city there. How did you find fasting through the pandemic? Did it add any stress to you, or did you just continue on as normal?
Fasting is a part of my lifestyle now. Like, I know you and I had some exchange about this thought of forget about fasting. which I'll explain in a moment. Like, you know, there's a saying in Japanese martial arts, enter through form, exit from form. And what it means is that a beginner in some art practices and drills the basics. So if you're learning to play piano, you practice the scales. If you're learning whatever the art is, but once you reach a certain level, it opens up the door. It just becomes a part of who you are. And it opens up the door to being more creative with it. Like, I just continue, you know, a lot of things changed. I work in an office. Our office was closed for 3.5 months. And during that time, our staff had to be remote. So the whole usual structure of my daily life changed. But no, I just continued doing what I regularly do.
Yeah, it's the one thing you can control. That's the way I look at it. And I say to people, look, you might not be able to control a pandemic yourself. You might not be able to control other situations. But what you can do, you can control that one clean fast a day, and you can control taking stock of your own health. But, mate, one of the other things I wanted to ask you about, the philosophy around the IF that you just talked about is fantastic. And for me, I agree with you. When I read a story about intermittent fasting and somebody's transformation, that is so much more beneficial to me than reading a whole lot of scientific papers. But Eddie, if people out there are struggling with IF and they're struggling to get going, and you're pretty experienced, what would be some of the things that you would ask them to examine?
Well, you know what? I saw that you had a list of, I forget if it was like 10, a dozen or 15 points.
Yeah, 15, yeah.
I hope you have that posted somewhere. I don't know if you have a website or, because I think, I'm sorry, I can't repeat them, but I remember they were wonderful. If they're struggling, you know, one of the reasons I love the group is if I have a question about something and I post it pretty much 24 hours a day, you know, every day of the year, I can instantly get opinions from 20 experienced people. And, you know, here's another one, Bruce Lee, absorb what is useful, discard what is not, add what is uniquely your own. So that's the approach, you know? I mean, here you listen to what other people have to say, you tweak it, you make it your own. What works, you keep. What doesn't, you throw out. And you find your way. And you really take ownership. You know, when you say if somebody's struggling, if someone said to me, I'm struggling with it, I would just say, what do you mean? What are you struggling with? Let's troubleshoot it. And I guess the one thing I would tell them, let it be easy. Like, allow it to be fun. Like, don't get like, oh my God, if I don't figure this out by tomorrow, doom. It's like, nah, you know what? It's going to take a while. You know, one day is going to go a little easier. One day you're going to have a day where it's like, I can't even believe I didn't think about food for the last 5 hours. Like, what happened? And like, those kind of days are like just a gift, and they just sort of like, you can't plan them. You don't know when they're going to happen, but they become more frequent, more reliably dependable, that you could predict that'll happen. So I think that person who says they're struggling should reach out for support. It's available and it's fixable.
Yeah, I think that's great advice, Eddie. And those 15 items that I did list there, I'm going to be doing a podcast on them, Eddie, and I'm going to go through each one in detail coming up. So hopefully that will be helpful to people. But Eddie, I can't tell you how great it is to talk to you. And 4 years as an intermittent faster now, and it's made it a sustainable lifestyle for you. And was there a point in time early on, or sort of 6 months or 12 months, where you just decided that you were going to intermittent fast for the rest of your life?
That's a great question. Right. I mean, I haven't said I'm doing this forever, but I don't think about ever stopping. It's just who I am, and I love it. It's helped me. It could help, as I said, I think billions. There's so many wonderful people like yourself and JJ and Jin, and I wouldn't want to say any more names because there's too many for me to name, and it's a wonderful community and just everything about this. There's no negative and an abundance of positive. So why wouldn't you want to do it the rest of your life? It's like,
Yeah, I feel like that too, mate. And I sort of decided after about 6 months, and the real kicker for me was when I lost the psoriasis off my body, and I had specialists tell me for 25 years that I would never get rid of it. And 6 months of intermittent fasting, it completely went. Arthritic fingers that I had for, donkey's years, they went. So many other things. And as I was talking about the mental side of it, the phobias that I had, my anxiety issues, my social issues, they all went away. And I thought, well, this is the only thing that's ever done that for me. And I'm pretty dedicated to it for the rest of my life because I find, and like you said about the forgetting your fast, I think that's really important. But Ed, we're nearly out of time today. And just one couple of final words of motivation, mate, from you, and just something, some gem that you may have there in the Eddie Friedman toolbox.
how about this one? Feeling good feels great.
Eddie, thank you so much, mate. And I can't tell you what a pleasure it's been. And thank you for getting in the passenger seat with me on the Fasting Highway
Graham,
today.
you're one of my heroes, and it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, mate.
Thank
Take
you.
care, Eddie. Bye. Oh, thank you so much, Ed. That was fantastic, mate. As always, entertaining, engaging, insightful, and inspiring. I really love your company and I just find you fascinating. And I think that your take on intermittent fasting and the way you drill down into it and the way you analyze it and the way you come up with all this philosophy around it is just so exciting. So anyway, next week here on the Fasting Highway, we're going to be speaking to Tracy Dixon Neal. And Tracy is from the Waikato region of New Zealand. And Tracy's story is truly inspiring. So please don't miss that one. Just some views on my book too. Yes, we are publishing this coming week. Very exciting and I'm looking forward to it. And so we'll probably do a bonus episode and I'll bring in a guest host to talk to me about that. And we'll go through it and just give readers a bit of a heads up what they can expect with it and what's it all about. So if you're interested in my book, don't miss that bonus episode. So until then, be well, be safe, and remember, clean fasting is everlasting.